Are you guys doing okay today? Okay. Yeah, I mean, you've been a little quiet this morning, I'm not going to lie. That always makes me a little nervous because I like to have the feedback, but we see that the sun's hopefully going to break through and it's not going to be so dark outside, and we're all here together, and we're commissioning a team to go out on a short-term trip. It's pretty exciting stuff. We also have a baptismal up here, as you see, so that could be exciting potentially today. So I'm just glad to be here. My name's Carter, and I'm the lead pastor. If we haven't met before, I'm glad you're with us. And before we jump into the text for today, I do just want to say that last week we had a student ministry interest meeting, and I want to give you an update on that because we're really excited about our focus this year is to try to reach the next restless generation, and that's really included college students primarily because we've seen God start to reach college students and college campuses through our church, which has been really awesome and amazing. But that also includes middle and high school students as well. We have a handful in our church, and we want to see God mobilize them and then reach more for us. And so our interest meeting had 18 adults there last week. Can we just celebrate them that God did that for our student ministry? Yeah. That's exciting for us because that means that those are 18. It's going to take a team of people willing to give their time and their talents to raise up the next generation here. And so we're in the process of working out some, you know, all of the details and the logistics for that. And so over the next few weeks and months, be on the lookout for some updates on a student ministry. We don't want to rush into it. We want to make sure that we get it right and do it really well if we're going to do it and sustain it for a long time and allow others to come into it. But it's just really exciting for us. And just to give you the vision behind it a little bit more, man, it's really about sending for us. As we've seen today, just like the short-term trips, Caitlin said it, our goal over the next 5 years is to send out 50 long-term missionaries somewhere, or missionaries, church planters, long-term sent, 50 people. That's like half of the people sitting in the room, okay? Or maybe more. That's a lot, which means that it's really more of a prayer goal, and we're asking God to move in miraculous ways to do that. Because we want to be a part of his mission, not just here in Roanoke, although we do, and that's why we're here. That's why we planted the church 5 years ago, 4 years ago. But we also want to see him do it somewhere else, because he deserves glory from all nations, all languages, all peoples. Is that not right? And so, who's the most sendable person in our church? Students. Either they're raised up in our household, and we send them out to go to college somewhere, or college students come here and we raise them up and we send them out to go get a job somewhere. Either way, students are the most sendable. So whether it's for, you know, a job or whether it's for a school or whatever it is, we hope that the primary reason they get sent out of Roanoke is for the mission. And so that's why we're doing what we're doing. That's why we want to reach the next restless generation. But I hope you guys are as excited about that as I am, because I'm very excited to see God raise up our students here and do that. So anyway, that's the first thing that I wanted to mention. Now, let's get into it. Okay, we're going to be studying John chapter 6 today. If you want to turn there in your Bible or find it on your Bible app, that's where we're going to be. And this is our topic, fear. The song was perfect for that for us. Gets us in the right frame of mind, but fear is our topic, and fear has a way of showing up uninvited and unannounced, doesn't it? You can be going about your day just fine, and then suddenly, your stomach drops, your pulse races, you break out into a sweat, and you realize, man, I am not in control the way that I thought I was. All it takes is a phone call, all it takes is a diagnosis from the doctor's office, something more serious, all it takes is a conversation with someone, any number of other sudden, what we might call storms in life arise, that remind us how fragile we are or how things are fragile. I mean, even this morning, our production team, it's a good thing we had our people on it. I mean, Billy over here, he's getting it done because we came in and we didn't have screens and we weren't going to be able to show anything, no lyrics or anything. We were trying to figure out whether we needed to, like, how we were going to get lyrics to you guys to be able to sing the songs this morning because nothing would work. It's just a little mini storm, but showed us how little control we really have sometimes. Billy was able to get it done, so he took care of it, along with our production team in the back. They were all on it. But those storms just arise, and they show us how fragile we really are, don't they? How little control we actually have in life. Well, we're in a series called Get a Hold of Yourself. We're talking about how we don't want our feelings to control us. We want to control our feelings. If we don't get a hold of our feelings, then they're going to get a hold of us, like shame or hurt or fear today, or we're going to be talking about loneliness next week. All of these are feelings that we feel very deeply that affect us and teach us something about ourselves. And fear is one of the most honest emotions perhaps we feel because it instantly exposes our fragility and that we aren't in control. We learn the truth that deep down I'm vulnerable. And I don't have power like I want to have power. And that's terrifying to us. It brings fear. It's why we're afraid of, you know, bugs that are scary looking, you know, or wild animals, maybe a little bit more dangerous, or maybe we're afraid of the dark even, because in those moments we know how vulnerable we are. Those are the kinds of things that remind us viscerally that we're not in control. And that's what the disciples faced here in John chapter 6, we'll see. They went out on the Sea of Galilee, and a storm came up, and they're waiting for Jesus, but then unexpectedly the storm comes along. These things often do. They're unexpected. We don't know, just out of nowhere, the storm throws them into chaos and fear. And Jesus teaches them something, and he's going to teach us something through this episode, something extremely important that we need to get. And this is our main point if you're taking notes. Follow Jesus to face your fears. If we're going to face our fears at all, we've got to follow Jesus. We've got to learn what it looks like to actually follow Jesus as believers, as those who say that Jesus is our Lord. We've got to learn to actually live that out, what that looks like for us. Only Jesus has the power and the desire to help us in these moments. It's not that we'll never be afraid. It's not that he alleviates. It's not like we just go in courageously, boldly, without any fear. So we learn how to deal with our fear in a healthy way, because fear teaches us something. And we take that to Jesus. We follow him with it. And he's present with us in the midst of whatever is making us afraid. Because there is healthy fear and there's unhealthy fear. Just like we've seen so far in the last, you know, topics that we've talked about, the last feelings over the last few weeks, there's always a healthy side, there's an unhealthy side. And there's a healthy fear and there's an unhealthy fear. Healthy fear shows us we need our security from God. We need to go to God with these things that make us afraid. That's what it shows us and teaches us. It reminds us that we are not God. God has nothing to fear. But we do, because we're not all powerful. We're not all knowing. We're not omnipresent. See, it teaches us something that's healthy. But unhealthy fear, it keeps us paralyzed. Unhealthy fear keeps us fearful at all times because we have no security at all. See, healthy fear teaches us to find security in God. Unhealthy fear means we have no security in our lives at all. And so we want to face our fears by learning to follow Jesus through them. Now, I don't know if you've noticed now that we're in the third week of our series, we're going to be spending a lot of time in John's gospel. Okay, we're going to use John's gospel to help us understand feelings. John's maybe the softer of all of the gospels, you know, a little bit more touchy-feely. You can get a sense of that in this. And that's why we're going to stay here for the next, you know, six, 7 weeks, however long we're going to be in it now. We're going to look at John's gospel. So you want to go back and read John's gospel, you're welcome to, so that you know a little bit more familiar with the text itself. But this is what we're going to see here over the course of getting into John's gospel today. We're going to see how these disciples face their fears. And fear, when it gets a hold of us, it's a problem. It's a problem for all of us, because when it thrives, we're thrust into chaos. We can't see our way out. It reminds me of the reels where, you know, have you seen the reels where it's dark and somebody's downstairs and they're alone and the light's on and they're like, okay, everything's put away, and then they got to flick the light off and then they got to run up the stairs to the light at the top of the stairs. And as they do it really fast. They're like, okay, here we go. And they click the light off and then they run really fast, and then somebody that's dressed all in black follows them up the stairs and is like grabbing them, you know? That's what it feels like sometimes. That's what fear does to us. It makes us, it puts us in chaos to where we can't, we are only worried about what we can't see. We're only worried about, you know, what we perceive to be a threat to us. It's scary. It reminds us that we're not in control. Our vision is limited in those moments. And we'll see the disciples feeling the same way. But Jesus is going to show them and us that the only way to face our fears is to follow him. He has authority over the storm. He is in complete control. And if we believe that, it's going to change our lives and change the way that we face our fears. So let's get into this. John chapter 6, starting in verse 16. This is what God's word says. That evening, Jesus' disciples went down to the shore to wait for him. Now, this is right after Jesus' miraculous feeding of the 5,000, just to put you in the context, okay? They're out in the wilderness. He had to slip away because all of the 5,000 plus people was probably more like 10 to 15,000 people in reality. They were trying to make him the king. They knew that he was the Messiah, and they wanted to make him the political figure, the political king. And so he slipped away into the hills to get away from them and to spend time by himself. And the disciples didn't know where he went. He was MIA here. So they jumped into a boat, and they waited for him. This is what it says. As darkness fell, and Jesus still hadn't come back, they got into the boat, headed across the lake toward Capernaum. They're like, Jesus is going to do his own thing. Who knows where he is? He'll come to us when he wants to. But then it says in verse 18, soon a gale swept down upon them, and the sea grew very rough. Now, before we read the whole story here, I do want to, let's start with a storm, okay? Because the storm is the important point for us that creates the fear. So here's the first point that we'll discuss. Storms expose our limits. Storms show us our limitations in life. Now, what I mean is the unexpected circumstances that come up in life are what we might call storms, right? The layoff you didn't see coming. Or your car breaking down when you didn't expect it to. Or your bills that pile up for some reason. Or an unexpected pregnancy in your life. Or a parent's divorce. Or a friend's betrayal. Something like that. Hopefully that touches on something. You guys get the idea here, right? Fear. These storms that come up. These moments often take us to the end of ourselves and show us the reality that we have limits, that we're not in control. There's nothing that we can do. We feel helpless. In the storm, darkness falls, right? The sea grows rough. You feel like the disciples here, they felt alone. They felt like God was not with them because Jesus hadn't gotten to the boat. They were out floating on their own. We feel the same way. We feel lonely. We feel helpless, like everything's in chaos. And that's what the sea represents here. In the Bible, the sea usually represents darkness, chaos, disorder. Like the creation event in Genesis 1. God brings order out of chaos when he brings the land up out of the sea. The sea represents chaos, disorder. Or like in Revelation, the dragon comes up out of the sea. God's enemy seeking to destroy his church comes up out of the chaos and the disorder. The sea represents these things. And so chaos terrifies us. We look at this, the vastness of the oceans, and we think, man, we have no control. And that chaos is terrifying, not just because it's unknown, but because it threatens to undo the order that we've worked hard to create in our lives, the order that we long for from God. So when you're faced with chaos, you become overtly aware that you have no control. It's a feeling of helplessness, anxiety, panic, paralysis perhaps. Oftentimes, we don't know what to do because the storm exposes those limits that we have. And as a result, we feel vulnerable. And so that's what fear is. You can write this down. Fear exposes our vulnerability. Fear exposes that we have this vulnerability because vulnerability means that we're open to attack, right? That somebody can hurt us. You're susceptible to harm. And if you let that fear of harm control you, it leads to some really panicked and anxiety-induced decisions, does it not? If it gets a hold of you, if that fear gets a hold of you, you start to make decisions. The fear makes the decisions for you. I mean, you think about abortion. It's just maybe one of the best examples of this. 9 times out of 10, abortion is driven by fear. Fear of not being able to provide, fear of what people will think of you if you have a baby, fear of losing your dreams or your future. Man, that very message perpetuated by our culture is a message of fear. A baby will mess up your dreams. You can't be a parent and be successful. You can't do it. Okay, that's not a message of empowerment. That's a message of fear. That's what abortion is. It's a choice of fear. And as a result, man, the life of a child is taken. The life of a parent is scarred with grief and regret. And when fear drives our decisions, it always leads down paths of regret. I see it time and time again through abortion. Or think about our relationships. You know, so many people jump into a dating relationship with somebody, anybody, because they're afraid. Not because they love a person, not because they know it's wise or think it's wise, not because they've asked for advice from others who are wiser and can speak in. No. They do it out of fear, a fear of being lonely, a fear that they're not going to find anybody else. They hear the fear whisper, you better settle for whoever will have you because you can't get anybody else. So you got to make do with the person that you have. And before long, man, you can find yourself feeling stuck in an unhealthy, unhelpful, damaging even relationship. It's a relationship that's not pulling you closer to Jesus, but it's pushing you further away. And just to be honest, guys, I see it mostly with women, if I'm just being real. They'll settle for guys that are not godly and that are not good leaders and don't even have any prospect of being good leaders. I don't know why. I think it's a fear of loneliness, a fear that they're not going to have anybody else. Fear can cloud our judgment, cloud us from seeing what we know is wise and right. Or parents, this one hits close to home for me. Maybe it will for you. Fear of what might happen to our kids can drive us to control every part of their lives. And we hover, we smother, because we're terrified that something's going to happen to them and it might go wrong, might screw up their future. But then on the flip side of that, maybe you don't discipline your children at all. Maybe there's no control. And you're afraid of what they're going to think of you, and you're afraid that you're going to drive them away, or you're afraid that you're going to become abusive because you had an abusive relationship with your parents and it scarred you. But listen, on either side of that coin, whether you're too controlling or whether you have no control and you just be like, well, okay, we can't, you know, we got to be friendly and make sure that they're, and coddle them. Either way, it's out of fear. Fear is driving your decisions. Fear leads us to do the things that we know aren't the best for ourselves or others. Fear leads us down a wrong path all the time, every time. And in those moments, we become hyper aware that we're vulnerable, open to attack, or open to hurt and harm. And we're afraid. But see, here's the question that we need to ask now, and this is what the Bible is going to help us deal with. How do you deal with your fear in a healthy way? We all have fear. There's fear everywhere. We make decisions out of fear all the time. We're afraid. So how do we deal with it in a healthy way? Because, man, we can't control how we feel. Feelings aren't bad. We've talked about that. They're not bad. But we can't let them control us. So how do we deal with them so that they don't control us, we control them? Well, let's look at how the disciples respond at first. John chapter 6, verse 19, this is what it said. They had rowed 3 or 4 miles. Remember, they're in the middle of the storm. They're trying to fight against it, trying to get to land. When suddenly they saw Jesus walking on the water toward the boat. Now, immediately you would think that they'd be cool and be like, oh, there's Jesus, look at this, here he comes. What's it say, though? They were terrified. I mean, it's their initial reaction. They're afraid in the storm, no doubt. But then all of a sudden, they're even more terrified because they see this, what looks like a specter or a ghost coming toward them. That's what Mark's gospel and Matthew's gospel tell us. They think it's a ghost walking on the water. So they're afraid in the storm. And then it goes from what looks like bad to worse for them, because they're like, now we've got a ghost that's coming to like make us even more fearful, you know? So their fears led to more fears. I mean, if you were out on Smith Mountain Lake on a boat at night, and all of a sudden you saw a figure out in the distance coming through the haze, you'd start to rethink some things about your life, right? You'd start to rethink reality a little bit. Like, it'd be terrifying. So I get it here. But they're trying to survive. They're afraid in the storm, and then it goes even worse for them. And if we're not careful, the storms of life can do the same for us too. It can cloud our vision of what can actually save us. So you can write this down. Fear clouds our vision of Jesus. Wasn't sure how to phrase that one. Could say fear clouds our vision, or just fear clouds our vision of salvation, what saves us. Fear clouds our vision of what can actually alleviate our fears. I just went with Jesus because he's the one walking on the water. And that's where we're going anyway. You know, we're going to the gospel here in a minute. So fear clouds that vision. It's like, this is the one thing that could save the disciples, and they're terrified because they can't see that that's the thing that's going to save them. Some storms are so bad that we get so afraid that fear takes control and obscures everything that we see in our lives. You see this with actively drowning swimmers. I was a lifeguard for quite a few years. And man, I saw it a few times. When people were actively drowning, they are terrified to the point that they cannot think of anything but survival, which means that if you approach them as a lifeguard, you have to be very careful. That's why they give us the tubes or life-saving devices, because that's the thing that you want to get to them, because they don't know that you're there to save them, and they will try to drown you because they're drowning. They'll pull you under if you're not careful, because all they can see, all they're thinking about is survival. So the very person that's come to save them, they cannot see that person's there to save them. It obscures all of their vision. And oftentimes, I think we're like that spiritually in different ways. We are trying to survive. We're terrified. We're just grasping and thrashing and grabbing. But the very thing that's come to save us, it's like we push away. We don't see that it's there to save us. We could do that in different ways. Fear of being hurt, again, can make us push people away who are trying to love us. You know, that's a response of fear. A new friendship forms, or a church community leans in when we're having difficulty, but instead of receiving that, we resist it and say, oh, no, they've hurt my feelings. They need to mind their own business. And we start pushing people away. Or we'll say things like, they didn't reach out to me when I needed them most. We'll make excuses for that, even though multiple people have reached out. We just put blinders on. Or they said, you know, I mean, they don't want to, they've ghosted people because they don't want to hang out anymore. And so you've texted them 4, 5, 6, 7 times, and man, they're just not responding. We can do those things because fear obscures our vision from what can actually help save us. Fear of surrendering control can even make us fight against Jesus himself because we hear him inviting us into things like obedience, trusting him with our generosity, or trusting him to go on a mission trip like we saw with the team that's up here, trusting him to make us more pure like Jesus himself, or to forgive others as we talked about last week a little bit more. And man, fear makes his invitation feel like a threat, not like salvation. So instead of grabbing his hand, we push Jesus away. And that's the problem we all face when we look at fear here. Because instead of following Jesus to face our fears, we push him away. We try to face our fears on our own. So the problem is we attempt to face our fear without God. That's the problem. We all do this. It's the classic case of the creature trying to become the creator. We talk about this a lot. I use this kind of language a lot because this is the original sin. We are made to be like God. We're made to be in his image. We're supposed to look like him in how we act and how we think and what we do. But instead, what we've done is we've tried to become God ourselves. We don't want God's intervention. We want to be our own God. And that's what we're doing here every time we push him away, because he offers to help us with our fears. We should go to him with our fears. And the very one who's come to help us, we push away and say, no, I don't want you. I don't want your presence in my life. See, facing our fears without God's like we're that drowning swimmer. We're just thrashing and kicking. When somebody gets close, we just try to push him away because we're just in survival mode. We can't see. But what it does is it shows us there's something wrong in our heart. Because we have so many people in the world who think that God is angry at us. He's an angry God. He doesn't want anything to do with you if you don't believe in him or whatever, you know. We hear this all the time in the culture. Problem of evil. It's a big deal. Why, if God, you know, why does he allow all this stuff to happen? And he must hate us. And he's a distant God. He's not. That's our natural response to the fears that we have in our life. Our fear makes us push him away. We get in survival mode. We're all like that. The very thing that we shouldn't be afraid of is the very thing that we fear the most, the God of the universe. We have an unhealthy fear because we've pushed him away, and man, it obscures our vision. And whether it's because of our pride or we're self-deceived enough to think that we can handle the storms on our own, or we're afraid of God's reaction to us, if we do go ask him for help, you know, we don't believe that he's good or that he wants to help, whatever it might be, we attempt to face our fears alone. And that's crazy because we know that we don't have the control to deal with those things most of the time. It shows us our limits. We can't calm the storm. We can't change our circumstances at times. And yet we push God away and it doesn't help anything. It only hurts. That's why I say, I mean, I'm telling you, if somebody's like, man, I cannot see how there is a God in heaven that would allow the pain and the suffering that we see, the evil that we see in the world. I can't see it. You're like, man, okay. Pain and suffering and evil, got it. Take God out of the equation, got it. Is there still pain and suffering and evil? Yes. Okay, so who's responsible for it now? If not God, if we take God out of the equation, who's responsible for it? We are, right? We are. If God doesn't exist, there's still pain and suffering and evil. So let's just imagine for a minute that we are the ones that are the ones causing the pain and the suffering and the evil. That we are the responsible party. Let's just imagine that for a minute. And then let's imagine that God has come in to fix that for us. That he's not the cause of it. He's the answer to it. That's what we want to see here in the text. And that's what the disciples learned with Jesus. They were on their own until Jesus came in. And he's the one that made the difference for them. The problem is we face our fears alone. We hear these voices in our head and we think, man, if I admit I'm scared or I'm tempted or I'm weak, God's going to punish me. Or we think that God doesn't care about me. He doesn't want to help me. And those fears rise up with our kids or our job or our finances or our future. Prayer is the last thing we turn to. And yet it should be the very first thing. There's something wrong and off about how we believe in God. If we're not going to him first in our fears, we have a problem in our heart. We start putting our trust in money or relationships or whatever it is that we're looking for, distractions that we have, and it only compounds the fear and makes it worse. I mean, have you ever heard of that saying, more money, more problems? Okay, well, that's legit, Because really, when you get more money, you're just afraid of losing it more. Because you have more to lose. Bigger your lifestyle is, the more you're going to lose if something goes wrong. I'm not saying you have to stay poor, and I'm not saying God doesn't love money, but I'm just telling you, those things aren't the answer. They compound the problem. They compound the fears. There is a better way. Whatever it might be for you that you're afraid of, that shows up in your life, we attempt to face these fears without God, and we're rejecting His authority, and we're rejecting His presence. We don't want Him. But the good news is that Jesus comes to us in the midst of our storm, whether we want Him to or not. Notice how the disciples didn't seem to be crying out for help. At least that's not how any of the stories record it. Jesus comes to them in the same way that He will come to us. And He saves them anyway, even though they didn't deserve it, really didn't even ask for it. And He'll do the same for us. The Bible teaches us that we're not like a drowning person in the ocean, and we're just in need of saving. We're not the one thrashing around. We're not the one blinded by our fear. That's not how salvation works. The Bible teaches us that we're already floating dead. We've been drowned for days, for years. We're floating there, dead. And what Jesus does is He walks across the chaos and the disorder. He overcomes it all, and He reaches down. He picks us up out of that mess that we're in. And He breathes new life into us. That's what the gospel teaches us. He overcomes all of the things that make us afraid. And He pulls us up and He gives us new life. See, Jesus walks over all of that to us, and He says what He says to the disciples, "Don't be afraid, I'm here." This is what it says in verse 20. He called out to them, "Don't be afraid, I am here." Then they were eager to let Him in the boat. I bet they were. And immediately they arrived at their destination. See, here's the gospel truth that we all need to get today. Jesus' presence is our security. Jesus being with us, that's the security that we need and have if we'll believe in Him. See, when the disciples welcomed Him into the boat, that's when things changed for this. That's when everything shifted. His words, "Don't be afraid, I am here," calmed them in the midst of the storm. And then the storm stopped. He was proving a point to them. His presence made all the difference. Chip Dodd, in his book, The Voice of the Heart, he points out that healthy fear calls us to trust in something beyond ourselves. That's what healthy fear does. That's what the Bible means when it tells us to fear God. You've heard that? We're supposed to fear God. Well, it's not an unhealthy fear where it paralyzes us and we're terrified, although that's usually what it ends up being because of our sin. But a healthy fear reminds us that we cannot trust ourselves. We have to trust Him instead. That fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, Proverbs tells us. And this is the gospel, that Jesus didn't just offer peace in our storms, but He entered the ultimate storm of God's wrath for us. We weren't just drowning, we were dead, but Jesus took that death onto Himself so that He could give us life. That's why we can follow Him into any fear now and know that He is present with us, because He exchanged His life for our death, and He gave us His life and took that death onto Himself that we deserve. See, Jesus' life is a perfect life. It had nothing to fear from God, had nothing to fear from man, none of God's judgment in His life, but He took that punishment that we deserve onto Himself. He took God's wrath and died on the cross in our place. So all that's left for us isn't God's wrath. We don't have to be afraid of that anymore. All that's left for us is His forgiveness and love and mercy. Man, what a beautiful gospel. And then Jesus rose from the dead and defeated that death for us so that one day we can be restored to God fully, once and for all, when Jesus returns to the earth. And that's our hope. It's eternity with God in His presence. Everybody always asks, we'll go over Revelation at some point, you know, what's heaven going to be like? Is it about heaven? Is it about getting out of hell and doing all that kind of stuff? No. It's not about that. It's about being with God, the one who created you, the one who loves you. It's about being in His presence. And that can start now if you put your faith in Him. John actually wrote about this later in one of his letters. We've been reading the gospel, but if we go to 1 John chapter 4, this is what it says there. All who declare that Jesus is the Son of God have God living in them, and they live in God. We know how much God loves us, and we put our trust in His love. Such love has no fear, because perfect love expels all fear. If we're afraid, it's for fear of punishment. And this shows that we have not fully experienced His perfect love. And if you got fear in your life at all, it's a product of the punishment that you know you deserve from God. That's what unhealthy fear does to us, is it keeps us there. And what God wants to do is show us who Jesus is, bring Jesus to us, and he wants you to accept his salvation, to accept that new life. Yeah, he breathes life into us, but we have to believe it. We have to trust him. He's not going to force himself onto us. Following Jesus doesn't mean you avoid fear or even avoid the storms of life. It means you're letting Jesus define your reality in the midst of it. You're letting him be your authority now. You're accepting his salvation, yes, but you are giving up your life to him. It's his life now. He's the one that's going to deal with it for you. If you're still afraid, it's coming from this deeper fear that you might be aware of, a fear of punishment, and the intuitive knowledge that you don't measure up, that you should be afraid. Because there's a God who's going to hold you accountable for your actions. And that's terrifying. Unless you see what God's done to bridge the gap. Unless you see what God's done to show you his love and to give you good life, satisfying life, eternal life. Jesus is our security, and that's perfect love. So let me just ask, have you experienced that in your life today? Do you have that fearless ideology in your life? Do you have that fearless mentality? Again, we're all going to get scared and we're going to face things that are scary, but man, when those things come up, where do you take them? Do you take them to Jesus or do you try to deal with them on your own? Listen, you can trust in Jesus today. Jesus says this about himself later in John's gospel. He says, "All who came before me were thieves and robbers, but the true sheep did not listen to them." The true sheep, those who are going to follow the true shepherd. And he says, "Yes, I am the gate. Those who come in through me will be saved. It's a sure thing. They will come and go freely and will find good pastures. The thief's purpose is to steal, kill, and destroy. My purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. Not a life of fear. Not a life of terror. We have to cower before God. A rich and satisfying life. Jesus is the secure entrance. He's the gate. He's the way in to that life. Boldness and courage and joy, satisfaction and richness, he says here. That's the security that you're looking for. That's the security that you want in your life. So if you're a Christian, you know this. Fear doesn't disappear when you follow Jesus. We still face scary things. We still face danger. But fear doesn't define you anymore. It doesn't have a hold of you because you've given yourself to Jesus. He has a hold of you. Paul told Timothy, one of his disciples, he said, "God hasn't given us a spirit of fear and timidity, but of power and love and self-discipline." That's the spirit we have in us now. Spirit of power and love. Self-discipline, man, we don't have to fear. When we fear God, we have nothing else to fear. There's nothing to fear. If we fear God, we know that he is our Father. And we have nothing else to fear. Do you want to be fearless? Do you want to live a fearless life as a Christian? You got to be selfless. And you got to give yourself to Jesus. See, I heard a pastor talk about it like this over the week. I listened to a sermon. So good. He was just saying, man, if you want to be fearless in your life, then you got to become selfless. And the way to become selfless is to die to yourself. He's like, dead men don't have any fear, right? Dead men aren't afraid of anything because they've already given up the very thing that they were afraid to lose. They've given their lives to Jesus. They've put themselves to death with him. He talks about the difference between consecration and commitment. You know, in our culture, we're so easy to commit, but commitments come and go. And we can commit ourselves to Jesus and we can commit to follow him. And we use that language here. I think if we use it in the right way, it's actually good language. But his argument is that in the culture, we just use it as like a frivolous thing, commitment. He said the Bible uses the term consecrate. We've got to consecrate ourselves. Consecration means we have to put ourselves to death. When something's consecrated, it's set aside for sacrifice. It's set aside for dying. When we come to Jesus, we're consecrating ourselves. We're putting ourselves to death. We're laying ourselves down. And when we do that, man, we're not going to be afraid of anything. How many of us are afraid to invite somebody to church? How many of us are afraid to speak the name of Jesus when we're at work or at school? How many of us are afraid to go to our neighbor and say, "Hey, I want to share something with you that's changed my life"? Man, if we're living in that spirit of fear, and it's maybe because we don't believe something true about Jesus today. And I think we need to take a long and hard look at what we're really afraid of. Here's the challenge. This is back to our main point. Follow Jesus to face your fears. This is what it really means to follow Jesus. Doesn't just mean you make a commitment and you follow Jesus and everything's cool and you want to come to church and you start serving and all that kind of stuff, which is all great. It means you consecrate yourself. You put yourself to death every single day, over and over and over again. If you don't want to fear anything, put yourself to death in the morning when you wake up. Live with Jesus and follow him instead. Don't follow your desires for money. Don't follow your desires for career. Don't follow your desires for the relationships that you long for. Follow Jesus. And he'll give you this courage that we're talking about here. Some of you need to hear that today and believe in Jesus. Maybe this is a story that'll help you because, you know, we've been trying to share a story in each one of these, and I think they've been very helpful so far, especially for me. Let me share Melissa's story today. She was very courageous. Obviously, all of these are with people's permission. They write it in, and they share it with us so that we can share it with you. This is Melissa's story. Let me read it, what she wrote to us. She said, "Growing up, I was raised to have faith in the Lord above all things. My family taught that God's plan was greater than anything we could ever imagine. Over the past couple of years, my family has endured a lot of grief. For them, it was easier to turn to their faith to deal with that pain. But I couldn't grieve the same way that they did, and I turned away from my faith completely. I was lost. I was angry. I was confused. Felt like God was pushing me away from him, when in reality, I pushed him further away." It's exactly what we've been talking about here. It's exactly what we've been talking about. Yeah, Troy, if you want to come up. "The Lord has truly worked hard in my life," she continues, "to bring me back to him. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. I was raised by Catholic parents who baptized me as an infant. But recently, as I started growing in my faith here at Redemption, I repeatedly told myself that my baptism as an infant was enough and I didn't need to do it again. And I was afraid of my family's reaction to me getting baptized for a second time. The last thing I wanted to do was cause them pain. I was scared of how people would react, what they would say. However, beyond that, I was more afraid that I wasn't worthy of being baptized. For a long time, I let my fears stop me. But after a lot of prayer, I realized that Jesus picked me up from the hardest moments of my life and called me back to him. So how could I not so boldly proclaim my faith and love for him? It wasn't until I could see how great his love was for me that I could let go of those fears and live my life for him and his mission." And then Melissa got baptized here on May 4th this year as a result of that. See, fear is the number one thing that's going to hold us back from living for God. It's going to keep us from living out the mission that God has for us, the purpose, the very purpose for which you were created, to worship him and to create more worshipers. Don't let fear get a hold of you today. Let Jesus get a hold of you. Let him take control of your life. Die to yourself today and live for him. Put your trust in him. Maybe for some of you, it's putting your trust in him for the very first time. Maybe you've never decided to trust in Jesus. Maybe you're here and you've just been checking things out, or you came because somebody invited you and you're just not sure about the whole Jesus thing yet. Listen, I'm telling you, this probably resonates with something in your heart. It should for all of us. He will set you free from whatever you fear if you learn to have the healthy fear and go to him instead. You could believe in him today before you leave. I wouldn't wait if I were you. I want to encourage you and challenge you. Put your faith in Jesus today. Don't be afraid. I am here. That's what he says to you. Don't be afraid. I am here. He's here with you right now. And he'll be with you forever if you put your faith in him and follow him for the rest of your life. But listen, for some of you, maybe you've already put your faith in Jesus. Maybe over the last couple of weeks, maybe the last couple of months. Maybe it was over the last few years and you just haven't done this yet, but maybe your next step is to be baptized. Maybe that's what you need to do because like Melissa, you were afraid. You're afraid of what your family think. You're afraid of what people here would think. You're afraid you weren't worthy enough or you didn't believe hard enough or whatever it might be that's in your mind. You haven't gotten baptized yet as a believer. Listen, I want to encourage you today. We put these waters up, preparing the jars, so to speak. It's just from an old 2 Kings passage that talks about an old widow who decided to put out jars because the prophet of God told her to. She had nothing, and she wanted to put out jars that had oil. She had one jar of oil, and the prophet said, "Hey, gather as many jars as you can. You got one thing of oil? Then gather as many jars as you can and then report back to me. And so she gathers jars. God overflows them. She has more oil than she knows what to do with until she can't find any more jars. And that's when the miracle stops and the oil stops. And she goes back to the prophet and says, look, I've got all these jars of oil. And he's like, yeah, now you can sell those and live off the proceeds and you can keep the rest to use. God provided for her miraculously. He did a miracle. And so we use that language a lot here, preparing the jars. Because what did it take for her to do that? It took faith. She had to believe. She had to believe that God wanted to. It was good enough to do what he promised to do. And we know that God has promised to build his kingdom here in this world. We know that God has promised to build his church and to save those who would believe. And so we're preparing the jars. This is our jar that we've prepared today. Nobody signed up for baptism before this. And if nobody gets in the water today, that's okay. God deserves the glory. We're still going to worship him. And then we put this up knowing that there's probably some of you guys that have believed recently, or maybe even today for the first time. And you need to get in this water and proclaim to the world what God has done in your life and in your heart to set you free from your fears. Because listen, like Melissa, when she was afraid, she grew up Catholic. She was baptized as an infant. I really appreciate her sharing her story. Because listen, if you were baptized as an infant, I don't want to take anything away from what your parents did to raise you in the faith. That is a special thing. But as we read the New Testament here, we understand that baptism is something that you do as a believer when you choose to follow Jesus. That's the symbol for you that shows to the world and to the church that you're going to not just commit your life to Jesus, although we'll still probably use that language, but consecrate your life. You go down under the water as though you're going into the water. You're in the waters of chaos and death and disorder. And then Jesus brings you up out of that chaos, death, and disorder into new life with him. That's what baptism represents. So that's why we practice it this way, but it's also for the believer in the room. If you know that you've become a part of God's family, then you need to get in these waters if you've never been baptized as a believer. Even if you've been in church for 30 years, it doesn't matter. If you've never been baptized, today's your day. Do that. I know that we all have excuses that we're afraid and we don't want to do these things and we're afraid of what, you know, our family will think or our friends will think. Listen, we have everything that you need today to get baptized. We have towels. We have a change of clothes for you to jump into. So you don't make an excuse for yourself if that's the case. We even have new friends for you if you need new friends today because you're afraid of what your friends are going to think if you get baptized. We've got plenty of people to be your friend, okay? Hey, but listen, this is serious. We even have a new family for you because this is God's family. And I'm not saying your family doesn't matter to you. They do. But you can't follow your fear. You got to follow Jesus. And if there's something that's holding you back from putting your faith in him and stepping into these waters to proclaim it to the world, man, it's got a hold of you. Jesus doesn't have a hold of you. So I want to encourage you to jump in the waters today if that's you. I know we all have excuses for why we don't do things. We all have fears. But we need to believe and step out in faith. Don't hide in fear. And it's for us believers in the room today. If you've been baptized already and you followed Jesus, man, I want to encourage you. We're going to take communion in just a few moments. Come up and get your elements and hold them at your seat because we'll take them together here in just a few minutes. We're going to pray and obey. This is obedience. We're going to consecrate. Maybe I'll just start using that language now because it's convicted me. We're going to consecrate ourselves to follow Jesus this week through the symbol of communion for us. Just like baptism is the first step of obedience for a Jesus follower, we're going to obey him in communion in an ongoing obedience that we want to consecrate ourselves to follow him with every week. So we're going to do that together. You can come up and get, but I would encourage you to pray. What fears do you have that you know you need to put to death today, that you need to follow Jesus in instead of following them? Spend a few minutes talking to God about that. What fear has been clouding your vision of Jesus? Is it a fear of not measuring up? Is it a fear of failure? A fear of surrendering control of your life? Man, die to yourself today and follow Jesus to face your fears. Let me pray. God, I just pray that over the next few minutes, people will respond. God, if somebody needs to get baptized, I pray that they would do that. I pray that as we take communion together, that would be a meaningful moment for us. As people need to pray and put their fears to death, I pray that they would do that. God, help us to really leave here changed. God, I pray that for every person in this room. Pray that for people listening online later. God, I pray that you'll change our hearts so that we'll follow Jesus. We won't follow our fear. God, you're so good to us and we worship you. You're worthy of our worship. It's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen. Now, as people come up and pray, if you need to get baptized today, let me give you a direction. We're going to have prayer counselors right out those double doors in the back. I want to encourage you that as people come up and pray and get their communion elements, you go back and you talk to those prayer counselors so they can help you through baptism, make that decision. And if today's your day, man, we'll get you changed and we'll get you in the water. Don't wait for that. Don't wait for that. Follow Jesus with your whole life. Put yourself to death and do that. For the rest of us, let's do that too symbolically as we get the elements and we come up and pray. Let's respond now. Thanks so much for listening with us today. We hope that it was an encouragement to you. But you know, we don't see this as a replacement for gathering with other believers in a local church context. So if you don't have a local church, we would encourage you to plug in with one wherever you are. And if you're in Roanoke, Virginia, we'd love to invite you to plug in with us here at Redemption Church. And you're welcome anytime to gather with us. But you can check us out online at our website, redemptionroanoke.com. You can look for other content or resources there. But thanks again for listening.